All that we see or seem is but a dream within a dream. If you look closely enough, a glimpse of every writer's life can be seen through their stories, be it deep pain, hopefulness, joy, or curiosity. What we express through ink and paper is undoubtedly filtered through our own subconscious, oftentimes leaving behind remnants of ourselves. Treasured poet Edgar Allan Poe had a tendency to do just this. In one of his most famous poems, A Dream Within a Dream, Poe questions a loss of reality. He says, "You are not wrong, who deem that my days have been but a dream." Though it is a short poem consisting of only two stanzas, each word plays a notable part in the poem's entirety. He vividly describes the difference between dreams and reality, and he suggests that neither one is more real than the other. It's filled with a confused wisdom, an acknowledgement of life's uncertainty. Uncertainty, of which would later on be the essence of his own death. Set to embark on a ferry trip around the Northeast, Poe suddenly disappeared, only to be found 5 days later behind a tavern bar in Baltimore, in an entirely disoriented state of mind. He died shortly after, leaving behind him over a century of wonder. It was as if Poe's writing, so filled with darkness and intrigue, foreshadowed his own death. Literary rivals jumped at the chance to paint an image of a drunken man, a washed-up writer with little going for him, lying on the dirty street in dirty clothing. Meanwhile, doctors suggested tuberculosis, rabies, or lesions on the brain. Had Poe been a victim of violent crime? A byproduct of voter fraud called cooping in his last days? The curiosity surrounding Poe's mysterious and sudden death has never ended, confusing historians and medical practitioners for over a century. My name is Anne-Marie Luno, and this is Down the Rabbit Hole. Born in the winter of 1809, Edgar Poe was predisposed to pain. His father struggled with alcoholism and abandoned the family soon after he was born. Only 3 years later, his mother passed away. Abruptly orphaned at 3 years old, Edgar Poe was sent to live with a foster family, a tobacco merchant named John Allen and his wife. They adored him for his beauty and his talent, and they even gave him the official name Edgar Allan Poe. The couple admired the young boy so much so that they would often have him entertain house guests. Not as a punishment, of course, but as a demonstration of pride. After grand dinners, he would be invited to stand in front of the guests and recite long, beautiful works of poetry. But given his past, he was still a sensitive child, and it's thought he began drinking at an early age in order to relax himself from the emotional strain of entertaining. Throughout the years, Poe's relationship with his foster father grew volatile. The two would argue constantly, adding a severe amount of trauma to an already sensitive boy. It's thought that this unstable household may have led to an alcohol dependence, of which Poe was known to struggle with for many years to come. But later in life, things began looking up. Poe had found a way to take his pain and transform it into beautiful writing, and by the fall of 1849, Edgar Allan Poe was living the dream life of an American author. He had written for notable literary magazines across the country, and of course, he had produced many short stories and works of poetry in his classic, haunting style. Poe was cherished for his work, which focused on the themes of death, grief, and heartache, even more specifically, the loss of loved ones. Audiences would come from far and wide to listen to his poetic readings, and even romance was on the horizon. He was just about to marry the love of his life, Miss Elmira Royster Shelton. Before the wedding, Poe was scheduled to make a quick trip around the Northeast on a job to edit a collection of poems by the American poet, Mrs. Marguerite St. Leon Loud. He was set to board a ferry that would take him from Richmond to Philadelphia, then on back home to New York City to escort his aunt back to Richmond for the wedding. But the evening before his trip, his fiancée Elmira had remarked that he looked sickly and unwell. She suggested he see a doctor, so Poe visited his close friend and physician named Dr. John Carter. After a quick examination, Dr. Carter told him it would indeed be best to wait a couple of days before making his journey, as he did in fact seem a bit ill. However, with the editing job and the wedding both coming up so soon, there was a lot to be done, and Poe didn't suppose he had time to waste. He made his way out of town the following morning anyways. Poe boarded the ferry and was at sea for a couple of days before taking a stop in Baltimore. That's when things began to get murky, as there were no newspaper articles reporting his arrival to Maryland, therefore no one following where he was nor who he met. As it was later found out, there wouldn't be an arrival certificate from the ferry either, turning out to be quite an inconvenient coincidence. After departing the ferry, the well-recognized man, Edgar Allan Poe, mysteriously disappeared to the world for 5 days before finally showing back up, in a hazy daze, on Lombard Street. It was a dreary election day evening in early October when Joseph Walker, a Baltimore resident, found a man lying on the ground near Lombard Street, just outside a local tavern called Gunner's Hall. The tavern had been used as a polling place for the week leading up to the election, and the area was now swarming with people placing their last-minute votes. As he squinted through the pouring rain, he was able to recognize this disheveled man as Edgar Allan Poe, the famed author. Poe was found convulsing by a nearby gutter, entirely incoherent. He was drenched from the rain and seemed dizzy and out of place. The first thing Walker noticed was his bizarre attire, as Poe was clearly in someone else's dirty, soiled clothing. It was tattered and ill-fitted, complete with a straw hat, much unlike his usually dapper uniform of a tailored wool suit. Walker offered to help him, asking if he knew of anyone nearby. Poe said he knew an editor in town, Joseph Snodgrass, to whom Walker then wrote a letter. "Dear Sir, there is a gentleman rather the worse for wear at Ryan's Fourth Ward polls who goes under the cognomen of Edgar A. Poe and who appears in great distress. He says he is acquainted with you and he is in need of immediate assistance. Yours in haste, Joseph W. Walker." Postage was stamped on the letter and Dr. Snodgrass soon arrived. The doctor, an advocate against the dangers of alcohol consumption, assumed Poe had been in a deeply drunken state and suggested that he be taken straight to the hospital. Poe was sent by carriage to Washington College Hospital in Baltimore only hours later. At the hospital, he was kept alone in a windowless room and put under the care of an attendant physician named Dr. John J. Moran. Dr. Moran's notes claim he slipped in and out of consciousness for the next 4 days, experiencing visual hallucinations, and struggling with his own internal demons. On the day before his death, Dr. J. Moran had written, saying Poe had been desperately calling out for Reynolds, over and over again until 3 a.m. the next morning. This Reynolds, whose character was so important, or even taunting, for Edgar Allan Poe, their identity remains conclusively unknown to this day. Poe's final words, "Lord help my poor soul," illustrate a distressed man in his last moments of life. And then he died at 5 o'clock a.m. on Sunday, October 7th. Unfortunately, the written reports of Poe's time in the hospital are famously vague and inconsistent. And if there ever was a death certificate, it didn't survive through the years. No medical records have ever been found. Dr. J. Moran listed the cause of death as phrenitis, also referred to as a congestion or swelling of the brain. This was once commonly used as a kinder way of describing alcohol poisoning. And though it was believed for many years following that Poe's official cause of death was in fact alcohol, which he undoubtedly struggled with throughout his life, people later suggested that this was biased all along, unfairly based on his reputation as a once frequent drinker. That being said, before his death, Poe had actually made a public and personal vow to stay sober. And with so many things going well in both his professional and personal life, it is unlikely this vow would have been broken at the time. Nonetheless, his drinking habits post-mortem were exaggerated by his literary rival, Rufus Wilmot Griswold. Griswold even authored Poe's obituary, calling him a morally bankrupt, drunken womanizer. He went on to write the first biography of Poe with the same biases, forming a fabricated idea of the author that led to this continued reputation. And unfortunately, Griswold wasn't the only one. Dr. Snodgrass, the editor from Baltimore, whom Poe had asked to be called the night he was found, had dedicated much of his professional work advocating against the use of alcohol. After Poe's death, he claimed Poe died from alcohol poisoning and used him as a warning, an example of the dangers of excessive drinking. Thankfully, Poe's attending physician in his final days, Dr. J. Moran, responded to these reports publicly, writing numerous articles about how untrue these ideas and assertions truly were. He even later published a novel on the subject titled Edgar Allan Poe, A Defense, in which he claimed the poet had not shown any signs of drinking nor intoxication. However, Dr. Moran also soon began giving lectures about Poe's final days, using his tragedy as a reference, maybe even for 5 minutes of fame. Through the years, the doctor's story grew more elaborate and embellished, captivating listeners with his fascinating recounts of the events. Dr. Moran continued lecturing on the subject for over a decade, until he died in 1888. Since he was Poe's only physician at the time, what could have been the most reliable source of insight into his final days quickly became an uncertain blur of hundreds of stories. After his death, hair samples were taken from Poe, showing low levels of lead and further indicating that he had in fact been sober at the time of his death. It was later concluded that while nobody will ever know which of Dr. J. Moran's stories were true, due to their inconsistencies, the tales of Poe given by Dr. Snodgrass and Dr. Griswold regarding him as an irresponsible alcoholic were after all untrue. This ignited over a century of speculation about what really happened to Edgar Allan Poe when he disappeared. With the idea of an alcohol overdose proven unlikely, a new and more unsettling theory soon emerged. Cooping was a popular form of voter fraud that was often practiced in the 1800s, and a very common practice in Baltimore around this time. Politicians would hire gangs to kidnap men, usually homeless and unsuspecting men. They were drugged and disguised, dressed in old clothing, then forced to vote for some specific candidate multiple times under various identities. Once the job was done, the gangs, known as coopers, would then leave the men on the street to die, often in designated places. Designated places just like the area Poe had been found, right behind the tavern bar, actively in use as an election polling station. This could explain the ripped, worn clothing Poe was found in, as well as the delirious, seemingly drugged mental state he remained in until his death. Once the victim of cooping fulfilled their task, they'd be rewarded with alcohol before being discarded in the nearest alley. So even with a vow of sobriety, if he had been drugged, forced to vote multiple times that day, and potentially given alcohol thereafter, cooping would very well explain his semi-conscious state. Years later, a writer named J.H. Ingram was documenting Poe's biography and had received many letters from fans attributing cooping as the cause of his death. The theory soon became more accepted than alcoholism. But there are still things that don't quite make sense. Why hadn't anyone recognized him at the polls? If Joseph Walker, the man who found him, was able to recognize him in the pouring rain, how could he have possibly gotten away with voting under different names, and for 5 days as well? This was just the beginning of the many theories to come. In 1867, a new idea emerged. A biographer named E. Oak Smith wrote in an article titled Autographic Notes, Edgar Allan Poe. In it, she suggests Poe was cruelly beaten to death at the command of a woman who felt she had been wronged by him. In 1872, another article was written suggesting a similar situation. Eugene Didier, a recognized authority on Poe, claimed in his article, The Grave of Poe, that Poe had met friends for a drink in Baltimore. Drunk after only a small glass of celebratory champagne, Poe parted ways with his friends and, in a drunken state, wandered the streets alone, only to get robbed and beaten to death by violent criminals. Since it seemed unlikely at this point that Poe had been engaged in binge drinking at the time of his death, the idea that he had been beaten to death rapidly gained popularity by explaining the still unaccounted for swelling in his brain. But with the new theory come new inconsistencies. There are still 5 unaccounted for days of his life, and his being beaten to death wouldn't explain him wearing someone else's tattered clothing. And so it was left as an unknown for many more years to come, as autobiographies were written with differing beliefs, each one trying to explain what could have happened, but all with little luck. Usually, the longer time goes on after a death, the more information people have about it. Even if not for decades later, a conclusion can typically be reached. But in the case of Poe's death, we found that the longer time went on, the more theories about his mysterious days in Baltimore there were. People have suggested carbon monoxide poisoning, the flu, and even murder. It wasn't until 1996 when a new theory emerged which felt stronger than the others. Dr. R. Michael Benitez was participating in a clinical pathology conference. The conference focused specifically on the illnesses of historical figures. Doctors were given a list of symptoms from anonymous patients, as well as any relevant medical notes. They were then asked to declare a diagnosis. Dr. Benitez had been given a patient with the title, A Writer from Richmond. This, of course, would later be revealed to be Edgar Allan Poe. According to the documents provided at the conference, the patient was described by Dr. John J. Moran, the physician with whom he spent his last days, as being lethargic and confused. His file stated that he quickly fell into a downward spiral, getting worse each day as he experienced visual hallucinations, had an irregular heartbeat, came in and out of consciousness, and often had difficulty breathing. Dr. Benitez had no idea at the time of the conference that the patient was Poe, giving him an interesting, fresh perspective. It was the first time since his death that Poe's symptoms were medically evaluated without any bias. At the conference, Dr. Benitez concluded that the writer from Richmond had died from rabies. This would explain not only his symptoms, but the length of time he was ill for. The average length of time after the onset of rabies is 4 days, the exact number Poe had been hospitalized for. Soon it was generally accepted that Poe had died from rabies, and Dr. Benitez's diagnosis was published in the Maryland Medical Journal in the fall of 1996. By this time, there were many, many theories on Poe's mysterious week in Baltimore, and each one seemed to make perfect sense until it didn't. There was always one small detail that kept any of the ideas, even rabies, from fully adding up. Around this time, from the late 1990s to the early 2000s, medical knowledge was evolving at an impressively quick rate. With this, a new theory came shortly after Dr. R. Benitez's diagnosis. Poe may have been suffering from a brain tumor. The rumors of Poe as an alcoholic didn't come up until after his death, with the announcement of him being drunk in the street revealed to be made up in an effort to make a case against drinking. But Poe was in fact known as a notoriously lightweight drinker, which would be the main reason he chose to practice sobriety later on in life. Years before his ferry trip around the Northeast, Poe had visited a physician in New York City who told him that he had a lesion on his brain. The physician suggested that this was the reason he had so much difficulty handling alcohol. Back in 1849, after his death, Poe was given a small funeral with only 7 people, and he was buried in a Baltimore graveyard under an unmarked grave. His body stayed there for 26 years until a statue was put up in his honor near the entrance. But in order to be put under the statue, workers tried to transfer Poe's coffin, but found it had heavily decayed alongside the body. It was noted as having fallen apart and crumbling when it was attempted to be moved. But despite the decay, one of the workers commented on hearing an interesting noise inside the skull, almost like a marble rolling around. Old newspapers from the time were fascinated with the find, and in an 1878 article from the St. Louis Republican newspaper, it was described as having been dried and hardened in the skull. Another newspaper, the Baltimore Gazette, called it his cerebral mass and said it evidenced no sign of disintegration or decay, though of course it is somewhat diminished. Other onlookers even claimed that they had been able to see the brain. It was in 2007 that these newspapers were found and reevaluated once again. Around that time, American novelist Matthew Pearl was writing a book about Poe that would later be named The Poe Shadow. During his time writing, he spent over 3 years researching him in the hopes of finding something new, and he was particularly fascinated with the mysterious circumstances of his death. He reread countless old articles, focusing on the tiny details that may have slipped through the cracks throughout the years. And this is when he found the old newspapers, claiming to have heard the sound of Poe's brain rolling around inside his skull. These articles took him by surprise, but for a different reason, because with the advancements of modern science, it is now known that the brain is one of the first parts of the body to decay after death. And so, Pearl zeroed in on that reported sound. After asking around, he found a forensic pathologist who told him that the lump couldn't have been a brain. What it could have been, though, is a brain tumor. The pathologist explained how while a brain would decay, a tumor would harden after death, calcifying in a stone-like clump, just like a marble, exactly like the descriptions in the old newspapers. With this knowledge, Pearl was given a new insight into the poet's death and a fresh perspective. This may have been the first theory in over a century that could provide an explanation for each of the mysterious behaviors Poe exhibited in his final days. Brain tumors have been known to cause uncharacteristic behaviors in patients. Nearly a third of patients with brain tumors experience a change in personality soon after their diagnosis. This could explain Poe's change of clothing and his loss of self. What previously felt like him suddenly didn't anymore. In regards to his mannerisms, a tumor could serve as another explanation. Depending on the location of the tumor, patients have been said to have difficulty controlling their movements, usually losing full control of their arms and legs. This would make sense in Poe's case, as the man who found him that rainy evening in October described him in his letter to Dr. Snodgrass as being in great distress, in a drunken, almost dizzy state. Not to mention that Poe's visual hallucinations are one of the more common symptoms of a brain tumor. Maybe the most telling of all was Poe's former doctor, telling him that he had lesions on the brain. Maybe the answer to his heartbreaking and sudden death had been there all along. Maybe Poe's famous quote, "A dream within a dream," was saying more than initially thought. He was a sensitive man by nature who spent his life healing from early trauma, known to write from the heart by creating characters based on his own experiences. And a dream, of course, comes from the mind, of which may have been affected later on in his life by a tumor, altering his perceptions and influencing his writings. And so, what if it was all along, but a dream within a dream? Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. If you appreciate the content and research, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts so more listeners like you can find my work. I have extra content from this and every episode on my Instagram at @drh_pod, and a transcript and sources on my website, drhpod.com. There, you can also leave me a case suggestion so that I can tell the stories that matter to you. And as always, I will see you next week when you follow me down the rabbit hole.